This episode of Inside EMS Podcast is sponsored by LogRx. Learn a better way to track your narcotics at LogRx.com.
Well, here it is, another week, and it's time to go inside EMS. I am your host, Chris Sabalero, and you can see to the space to my right. I don't even know what to say. I'm not even talking right. Is my good friend. He is back from special assignment. He was out doing the things that he does. I don't even know what he does. He just takes off and says, Chris, I got to go.
I just do.
But here he is, the one we call Kelly Grayson. Kelly Grayson, KG, welcome back for another run. But you're, I mean, how busy are you traveling around the country, delivering education to the next generation? And I actually said, it's not only the next generation, but you polish the current generation of EMS provider with your tales of woe. Maybe it's not woe, but expertise.
Woe, triumph and tragedy, I mean, that sort of thing.
I mean, you're like a WWE wrestler 200 times a year. You were on the road and you were teaching EMS stuff.
Yeah, I'm like the Ric Flair of EMS, the bad nature boy. Yeah, I lectured at a conference up here in near 15 miles from the house last week, and I had a good time doing that, and a lot of great engaged attendees and things I like to do, you know?
Yeah, I did a solo show 1 week, and our international correspondent, Rob Lawrence, so you heard his show last week, and, you know, it was really good. It's really good when Rob steps in. And, you know, it adds a dimension to the show. It's almost like more refinement. It's almost like it brings more credibility to the show when Rob's on, because he's got that Robin Leach.
That's just because he has a British accent.
Oh, yeah, but that's still, I mean, that's something, right?
And
that's
lifestyles of the rich and famous.
That's right. But anyway, you have that good British accent yourself. You should throw that in every so often. But, you know, Kelly, yeah, so
every now and then.
One of the things that I think that we have great expertise on is public speaking and being able to present in public. And it's one of those things that I enjoy teaching as well when we think about instructor methodology. And a lot of people will say, I don't know how to become a public speaker. Well, how do you start becoming a public speaker and speaking at conferences? And really, I tell them the same thing. It comes down to the methods of instruction. You know, it's like a skill. It's like starting an IV. It's like intubating someone. You have steps that you need to go through that you want to be able to understand. The adult learner, how to write objectives, you know, how to develop an impromptu presentation. You know, I think PowerPoint has ruined the platform instructor. When I first started speaking way back in 1986 and 87, there was no PowerPoint. We were using slides and then so on and so forth. But I think the big one that people really need to be able to feel comfortable with is different presentation skills, right? Yeah. So if you want to be a dynamic speaker, you need to be able to work on your presentation skills of what it takes to deliver the message. You know, we could talk about preparation. Yeah. That is the most important component of being a good public speaker, being able to prepare. And I have this process of preparation where I will prepare 4 to 6 hours for every hour of instruction that I'm going to give, right? I want to give them something new. So if I'm teaching something that I always teach, I want to find something new that I can give in case there's somebody in the audience that has heard me speak before. Oh, that's new, or something to that effect. Yeah. But I thought maybe it'd be cool to spend the show, you and I, talking about our experience and talking about presentation skills.
Yeah, and there's definitely an art to it. It's not something that comes naturally. It's something you have to practice and polish a great deal to do. You work 4 to 6 hours for every hour of a presentation. Heck, man, it takes me, 4 to 6 hours probably for me, but I'm not counting the time that I procrastinate, mull it over in my head, review the relevant research and do, you know, Medscape and Google Scholar searches and deep dives on that to get relevant current research on it. The actual putting it down, probably 4 or 5 hours for an hour.
I don't want to qualify that. I think you said it right. It's not the building of the presentation. It's actually going through the presentation as if I was giving it to you. That's what I'm talking about. But let me ask you this question, Kelly, because, you know, one of the big things that people have challenge with is stage fright, right? When we speak. And sometimes we have stage fright even to this day. And we're I think we're very accomplished. But I think the first thing is, in the beginning, as you started to kick this off and we deal with the stage fright, you know, the heart racing, the sweaty palms, the pacing, the hand wringing and our voice cracking. How did you get over stage fright initially to get yourself to an experienced instructor?
I'm gonna tell you something that's gonna piss you off. I never really had stage fright. I never I'm serious. I'm dead serious. I mean, if I have, it has been, you know, I get the butterflies, especially if I'm delivering a lecture that I've just developed and it's the first time and I don't know how it's going to be go and how it's going to be received. And I haven't had a chance to polish it in front of people. It's one thing rehearsing it in your recording studio and looking at yourself on screen and saying the words to a static screen, but doing it in front of people is a different dynamic altogether. So but as far as stage fright, that's about as tense as I've ever gotten. It's just wondering how this is going to go and playing it by ear. The thing is I'm an extrovert on podcasts and at EMS conferences, you know, and that sort of thing. And that's a role I play. You're not looking at Kelly Grayson, paramedic at an EMS conference or listening to me talk and deliver a lecture. I kind of shift into salesman mode, you know, and one of my first teachers in high school in marketing said, you know, teaching is just knowledge salesmanship and you got to sell the sizzle, not the steak. And he said, you got to learn how to package your material so that it's digestible for the vast majority of the people that listen to it. So, you know, I kind of slip on that salesman hat, and that's not actually who I am 24/7, 365. And by about day two or day three of an EMS conference, I'm kind of peopled out. So, but when I get into that role and playing, you know, Kelly Grayson or ambulance driver at a conference, you know, I just riff and go off like that. But it takes a toll. I don't get nervous during the fact. I get tired, extremely tired afterwards. And all I want to do is just sit and drink a beer and.
Yeah, but I think that has to do, I get the same way. But I think the reason that we get that way isn't, you know, because I believe it or not, I'm the same way. I love to be in front of people. I love to speak. I'm very dynamic. I'm very energetic.
Yeah.
But I'm socially awkward in social settings. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I'm the same way. So I have this extrovert in doing the show. You know, it's all about education for me. It's all about teaching for me. But when I have to go to a party, I don't do well talking to people and things like that. But anyway, here's the point I want to make to exactly what you said. I don't know that it's your people doubt as much as it is that our style of education is we don't read off the PowerPoints. We're trying to come up with stories. We're trying to come up with analogies. We're trying to come up with humor. We're trying to come up with points. And that just fries our brain. And then when we're done with that, we just don't want to think about anything anymore. So we're trying to be on and we're trying to be quick and we're trying to be, you know, funny and we're trying to be. And then when it's over, our brain says, leave me alone now. So I don't know that it's, you know what I mean? But I understand your point. But all right, so good.
To answer your question, though, succinctly with just one thing, I think the ultimate cure for stage fright is, it's a cop-out maybe to say it, is preparation. Where you're the more prepared you are, the less nervous you are. People ask me, hey, can I get your lecture and your slide notes? I was like, well, I have no slide notes. They go, you don't have slide notes? I said, no, I have the notes are on the screen. Everything else is up in my head. Yeah. That's probably the one way you can tell that I'm nervous at an EMS conference doing a talk is I will occasionally get ahead of my slides. I will start to riff on one thing and forget that I have brought that bullet point up or that particular point in a slide, maybe the very next slide or the one after that, and I'll get a little bit ahead of myself. And so if you're looking close, there's that lack of polish. What I'm talking about sometimes goes beyond what's on the slide. But once I've done it a few times, you know, it's, you know exactly what's on the next slide. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to think about it.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one of the things that I think is important when we think about stage fright is people are afraid that they're going to forget what they need to say, or people are afraid that they're going to be asked a question that they don't know, or people are afraid they're going to embarrass themselves with standing in front of the room. But to your point, preparation is all about knowing what you're going to say. Sometimes you're teaching a class that people have no knowledge about. So you can say whatever the hell you want and make a mistake. Yeah. And, you know, people already
and they'll never know.
So do away with that. But it really is preparation. And how many times in your career as a speaker have you been asked a question that you didn't know the answer to? I mean, I've been hit with it quite a few times in my speaking career. Yeah. So you just got to know how to get out of that situation by saying, that's a great question. Does anybody else know that answer? Because I don't. Or you say,
exactly,
let me go ahead and find out and we'll get back to you. If you say that, my best advice to you is ensure you get back.
Yeah, there are two types of questioners that in lectures. There's self-aggrandizing question guy who forgets who the speaker is that people pay to come see. And he wants to get up and or he or she wants to get up and talk at length about whatever, and no one cares. You know, you're not asking, he's not asking a legitimate question. He's talking to hear himself speak. Those kind, you know, you just nod and acknowledge politely and then shut them down and move on quickly to someone else. And then there are the ones that have genuine questions. And truthfully, I love those kind of interactions, even especially when it doesn't frighten me when I don't particularly know the answer, because this is what that, if you look at that rather than, that stumps me, this is a way to get the rest of the audience participating in the presentation. And that is what people value. They want interaction in a presentation. And when you can foster some good discussion there, that really adds to the flavor of the thing. So if you're a master of Socratic dialogue, which I have learned to do through years of teaching, that, you know, you're not standing up and just expounding, you are leading a discussion and making course corrections along the way. And the people listening to you make the discoveries, and you just, you know, yes, you got it. And that's sort of thing. So if you're good at Socratic dialogue, you can take those and enrich your presentation with them when you're hit with that question that you don't quite know the answer to. That's a very good question. Who wants to answer it?
You don't know. I've said this before. If you know everything there is to know about EMS, raise your hand. If you know everything there is to know about public speaking, raise your hand. If you know everything there is to know about the topic you're speaking about, raise your hand. Right.
Yeah.
But you have to just be able to wait to get out of that. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, Kelly. And then on the other side, I want to talk about some best practices of presentation skills that we can share with our audience.
Designed and founded by EMS professionals, LogRx provides real-time accountability of all your narcotics from cradle to grave. Reach out today for a demo and download the app on the iTunes and Google Play stores. And coming soon, LogRx will also track your medical supplies, equipment, PPE, and even vehicle checks. For more information, visit LogRx.com. That's LogRx.com.
All right, back again with Inside EMS. Chris Sabalero, Kelly Grayson with you. And we're talking about presentation skills. And one of the things that I really want to touch on is I was at I'm not going to say where, and I was listening to multiple speakers, and they were so monotone. So today we're going to talk about the opportunities that we have with learning our EKGs. Oh my God, stab me in the eye with a fork. You have to be able to use your voice to make your point and to keep people active in the class. And that's called voice inflection. You need to be able to ensure that your voice goes up. You need to make sure that your voice goes down. Sometimes you can be monotone, but you need to be able to throw those voice inflections into your... I use them when I'm making a point. Sometimes I'll step towards the audience when I make that point. Sometimes I will use my hands when I'm making that point. But you want to be able to have the ability to use your voice as a tool in delivering the points to your presentation. And you don't need to scream. You don't need to. Sometimes I can get a little bit loud and I hear myself and I've got to be able to back up a little bit to say, slow down there, Flappy. So, but voice inflection, how important is it to making your point?
Huge. And one thing I learned early on, if you really want to make a point, you don't have to raise your voice. In fact, sometimes it's more effective to lower your voice. You're wearing a lavalier mic. They can still hear you. Whisper it. And everyone kind of leans forward again. You whisper it one more time for emphasis. And then you change tone. Maybe you thunder like a preacher from the pulpit and or whatever. But if you really want to get people leaning forward and looking at listening and sitting on the edge of their seat, that's one way to do it. You see, and people that change their inflection and change their tone of voice and modulation are, in some sense, they're good performance. And a good lecture is a performance. You go listen to Rami Duckworth, for example. Rami's not just a teacher, he's a performer and a good one. Bob Page, you know, some of these other ones. And Bob actually, you know, he calls his shtick edutainment. I don't agree with everything Bob Page has to say clinically, but there is no doubt that he's a polished presenter and he carries a pretty clear message that people remember. I said, you, I love how you talked about, you know, how sometimes I'll use my hands. I was like, what do you mean sometimes, Mr. Italian?
You can tie my hands behind my back. Sometimes I can't talk, I use right? my hands.
What?
Yeah.
That's you're right. You're mute, but... But that sort of thing, you know, the two things will carry a presentation, and it depends on what you want to do. You know, that there some people have really, really good data, good information, and it's wasted because they rely entirely on the data and information to carry the lecture. And some people have very bad information and very sometimes incorrect data or simplistic data, but force of personality carries them through. And without naming names, we know who those people are, and we've listened to them before. And they're both successful in their own ways. But the best presenters have really good, relevant, clinically accurate information, and they present it well. And one of the things that I pride myself on is people ask what's your shtick? And I say, I'm a professional explainer. And that's what I do for a living is I take complex subjects and I explainer. Yeah. Should I have said it with my hands so you can hear it? Yeah. I'm a professional explainer and I take complex, nuanced topics and break them down into digestible take home messages. And there's an art to it as well. But I think even the best presentation skills or the best information is lost by people making simple mistakes with their materials. They make simple mistakes with their materials. How many times have you ever gone into a lecture and someone had just the most horrible tiny fonts? You had to sit in the very front of the room and squint. It was rife with spelling and grammatical errors and that sort of thing. We've all had those, but to continually make them is a sign that you haven't polished it very well. When you develop your materials, what's your go-to? What kind of font do you like, size, background, that sort of thing?
You know, I don't really, you know, I like the Bookman O style. I like to probably, depending on the size of how much that information I'm putting on the slide. And when you think about that, it's no more than three to five lines, no more than 3 to 5 words per line. Depending on how many lines I'll put on, I'll make the words fit into the slide. So I don't set my presentation up that they're all the same font. I set it up based on the slide and based on what I want to get across with that slide. I'll put a picture, and I try to use more pictures than I use words, but I like the Bookman old style. You know, I like Tahoma, whatever the heck Tahoma. It is. Tahoma. And how about you? What do you use?
I'm a fan of Calibri or Arial, because it's simple, it's clean, it works really well. And some people are going to slay me for this. I like to use for the slide titles, Comic Sans. Oh my gosh. Oh my God, you use Comic Sans. How lame is that? You know? But for the titles, I think that
pretty lame.
That
Let me
looks
answer
pretty.
it for you. Pretty lame.
No, it's not pretty lame. If you do your entire presentation in Comic Sans, yes. But slide titles, I want it to be visually appealing and make that kind of thing pop a little bit. One thing that I've graduated to over the years, I started out with I had the MetaTraining Solutions slide background, and every one of my presentations had the same slide background. It was an ambulance or an EMS themed slide background with my company name across in tiny little red font on the lower left right corner, and over the upper left corner was a tiny watermark with the presentation name. And I kind of got away from that because it got kind of tired and I wanted something with less words. So now just about all of my presentations are the slide background is a photo that follows the theme of the presentation. And it's all photo slide backgrounds. And what I will do is I will mute that photo in the settings. It says slide background, save your photo as slide background. And I will dim that photo so that light text pops against it. And I'll just bring my stuff up that way. And with photo backgrounds, one thing I've learned is I like to put a photo on the slide that has to do with the point I'm making to illustrate that point. If I'm talking about medications, I'll have a photo of a vial of that drug up there or whatever the case may be. Or if I'm talking about the mechanism of entry in this scenario that I'm talking about, there will be a picture of the car there. But one thing I've learned to do that really makes those stand out is I don't just cut and paste something in there. I remove the slide background first. I mean, or the photo background first. So there's no white background square just superimposed on the slide. It looks like it's just put in there. And that looks more visually appealing. I think the biggest mistake people make.
I have no idea what you're talking about. There I go.
Biggest mistake people make font-wise is too damn small. The font is too damn small, or it does not contrast with the background. You know, the old tried and true is like a blue background and yellow or white font, or a black font on a white background, or vice versa. It has to be highly contrasting. And they have this really dull background, and the font's color doesn't contrast very well. But minimum, folks, 24-point font on your slides at minimum. You don't have to get huge with it, 24 to 28. So all my slide presentations, I will go into the slide master and the main bullet point is 28-point bold font. The secondary bullet point is 26-point bold font. And all the other ones below that are 24-point font. So even the smallest sub point, if I use, that smaller subtext is at least 24-point. You can see it from
all
the
right,
back
we got to We got to stop. We're spending too much time on fonts. I'm tired of hearing about fonts, man. But the last point I want to make is a couple tips. I'm actually at a speaker's summit that's led by a gentleman named Les Brown this week. And Les Brown is...
Did he bring his brand of renown with him?
He did not. But he is a great public speaker. I mean, he talks to hundreds, thousands of people at a time. I'm honored to be in his class to learn how to be a better speaker. But he's got a saying that never make a point without a story, never tell a story without a point. But I also want to give you another tip. One of the things that you need to be able to do to engage your audience is use your questioning techniques. And there are four questioning techniques that you want to be able to use, and you want to be able to use them equally, right? So the first questioning technique is the overhead question. What's the capital of Iowa? You just throw it up overhead and let anybody answer it. Then you have the overhead direct question. What's the capital of Iowa? Kelly, right? So you go overhead and then you go direct. So overhead direct. Then you have the direct question. Kelly, can you tell me the capital of Iowa? And then finally you have the rhetorical question. Do we really need to know the capital of Iowa? So when you start to think about this from a presentation standpoint, you want to be able now to use those questioning techniques to engage the audience and keep them into your presentation. One of the big failures that I think we make as speakers is that we just talk. People want to be, the adult learner wants to be engaged in their learning process and get them to be part of that.
Yeah.
So as you prepare for your lecture, there used to be times in my olden days where I used to put a question at the bottom of the slide that said, can someone tell me the capital of Iowa? And that meant for me to stop talking and give the audience the opportunity. But that's my last tip for you. But Kelly, go ahead and give them your final word and then get us up on out of here for next week.
Yeah. Well, you know, your open-ended overhead questions, basically it's a breakdown of how Socratic dialogue goes. Last couple of tips I would recommend is learn to teach with your back to the screen. Learn to teach with your back to the screen so you're not reading slides. And the only way to do that is to be intimately familiar with what's on the screen when you click next on the pointer. And sometimes it helps, and some conferences you go to are actually thoughtful enough to have a confidence monitor in the front row. If you've seen those, they'll have a secondary, like 24-inch computer monitor in the front row on the floor. So you can face forward and you can see what's on the screen behind you. That's handy, but you should be able to do it all on your own. And think of the podium or the center or wherever it is. When you start a lecture, this is your instructor box, your home base. And don't just stand woodenly behind a lectern. Move around a little bit. You know, I sometimes overdo it. No one likes a stalker that runs to the back of the room, is always having to crane their neck to see them, but move around a little bit. And when you need to kind of, center yourself, return to your instructor home base and move on to the next slide. But hey, that's what I do. We've heard what Chris does. We'd like to hear what your thoughts are and your tips and techniques to being an effective and polished presenter. Hit us with those at the show at EMS1.com. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes and follow us. And for myself and co-host Chris Sevalero, a man that can't talk with his hands tied behind his back, thanks for tuning in to Inside EMS. We're going to catch you guys next week.